सहना भवतु
सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्वी नावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Let's do verse 5.
No dehi nasthane kesham,
na
vrittim yati nakshayam,
swayam
vibhati atanyani,
vasaye sadhanam vina,
na udeti na astam eti esha na vriddhim yati nakshayam swayam vibhati atha anyani bhasayet sadhanam vina. Sandhi. As I said, the verses 2, 3, and 4 were really just expanding upon verse 1. And verse 1, first verse, went through the Driktrisha Viveka, the see or seen differentiation, leaving you with the nature of the Sakshi, the witness, and then saying the Sakshi itself cannot be objectified. Right? Where everything else is objectified can become a Drisha, something that is seen, that I have a subject-object relationship or a see or seen relationship. When we get to the Sakshi, now that seer-seen relationship is no longer no longer can take place, because there is nothing behind the Sakshi. There's nothing. It's like saying there's nothing behind consciousness, which makes sense. What would be behind consciousness but consciousness, or non-existence but non-existence, which is an interesting idea. So, well, behind consciousness is non-existent, is non-existence. This is just a little aside. Behind consciousness, maybe there's non-existence. But I'll tell you, the problem with non-existence is that it doesn't exist. that's quite a problem. So non-existence is conceptual, right? We can say that something, like in the Vedanta, they'll use as an example, the son of a barren woman does not exist. It means a woman who's not able to give birth to a son or to a daughter, that son and daughter is not there, right? But that's just a hypothetical. The fact that it's not there doesn't mean that there's something there. There's the absolute absence of something. So if you say something is non-existent, then we're not really, it's not going to be a player in the world of our experience because it's not there. So to say that consciousness has something backing it, so it's not going to be an object, it's not going to be something that we say is jada or something that is inert, something that inert can't be behind consciousness because consciousness will illumine that, right? So we could say that the only thing we could say is, well, maybe there's a consciousness behind consciousness, but then what would be between consciousness and the consciousness? If you say there's a consciousness behind consciousness illumining the consciousness, what would be between the consciousness that's illumining the consciousness, if such a thing were even a possibility? And then you can't come up with an answer for that, because you could say maybe the only thing that could be between consciousness and consciousness would be space, which is hypothetical. We've got a little space, we've got consciousness illumining consciousness. There should be something between the consciousness to illumine the consciousness, right? So consciousness is illumining this consciousness. So what's between the two? the consciousness that's the illuminator and the conscious and the thing that's being consciousness that's being illumined. If you say there's nothing between the two, then there's only one consciousness. If you say that there is space between the two, then consciousness itself illumines space. Right? That's another thing that we'll be seeing as we do this more and more, this Drisha Viveka. Everything that can differentiate one consciousness from another, so that's where this hypothetical consciousness, illumining consciousness comes in to play. We have to realize that everything that could possibly separate one consciousness from another is itself objectifiable. Even space. Like, say if you think to yourself, oh, now, my innermost self is a conscious being. I am a conscious being. And you say, yes, and I am a conscious being, and I'm a conscious being. So what's dividing all of these different conscious beings? Because as we do the seer seeing differentiation, right, I end up as the ultimate knower, that what we call the pratyagatma, that the one that is most innermost. Pratyag means the most innermost, the self which is innermost. Innermost means I can't be objectified. I've objectified everything that can be objectified. I'm just left as myself, the Sakshit conscious being. And you're all in the same position. When we do this Drisha Viveka, you're also left with this conscious being, conscious being, conscious being. But then your conscious being is over there, and your little conscious being over here, and your conscious being over here. Right? And so say we have 20 little conscious beings in the room, right? All having objectified, so this is the nice part of it, all of us have got going through this strict Drisha Viveka, all of us, the seer seeing differentiation, all of us have objectified and recognized as Drisha, something that can be seen, right? Subject-object relationship. We've all done that with our bodies. We've done it with the rupa, with all of the rupas, with all of the names and forms that I see through my sense organs. So all of us have objectified the world that I perceive through my sense organs. We've all actually, if we're doing it like that, we've all actually objectified the physical body also. Because this physical body is only known to us through our sense perception. Like if you get rid of your eyes, you lose all rupas in all forms, including this body, in terms of your experience. If you're blind, you're not going to have an experience of the body. If you're deaf, you're not going to have the experience of any sound, let alone this sound. Right? So this physical body itself is objectified by me, is known to me through my sense organs. Even the sense of touch that pervades the whole body gives me a sense of this body being a conscious being, because my sense of touch goes through the entire body, you know? I had a friend who was a paraplegic. He came that way in a car accident when he was around 18. If he would close his eyes, he could only have any sense of his form to hear. That's all. Any other, the recognition of the rest of his body had to come through, like his eyes, seeing his body, you know, but not through feel, because he couldn't have no sense of touch that would run past that. So from his standpoint, unless he could see it, there was no sense of a physical body there. If you close your eyes, then you're only this much, you know. But that's how powerful a sense of touch is. That's how you know that you have a body, is because you have a sense of touch running through it. You see it, you taste it, you hear it, you smell it, just like the rest of the world. So this body itself is drisya. It's something which is objectified, right? And it's objectified through our sense organs. So as we do this strict drisya viveka, you and I, we're all of us in this room are involved in the same process, where the drik, the seer, is being differentiated. My being, this conscious being that I am, is being differentiated from everything, from every experience that we have. So I'm now, as we differentiate through my sense organs, I differentiate myself, the conscious being, from my body, right? My body and all of the names and forms that we experience. Differentiate means I'm not that. I am free of that. Just like if you, one of you were to walk out of the room, I don't walk out of the room. Because there's a subject-object differentiation, right? So what happens to what I'm perceiving, and in fact, we're watching, experiencing the things that we perceive change all the time, right? You're here experiencing the thing, the, all of these things changing and coming and going, so you can't. You can't be that, or you would be going when they go. That's the thing. So when we're doing this, all of us are involved in this room with this see or seeing differentiation. We are all recognizing that I'm not really my, I'm not this world, I have a subject-object relationship with it, and I'm not this body either, because I have a subject-object relationship with it. I am aware of it. I watch it grow, I watch it change, I watch it modify. And so what that means is that if I have a subject-object relationship, a see-or-seen relationship with my body, this body, and you have one with your body, then the differences between our bodies, which are all different and unique, doesn't say anything about me or you. We say, yes, all of these forms are different, all of these bodies are different. But that is not a statement about me. It's a statement about these bodies which are objectified. See what I mean? So I'm different from you from the standpoint of this body, but not from the standpoint of the one who is aware of the body. See? So then as we go through in this Drisha Viveka, it's the same thing with the mind. Your mind is aware of the sense organs. Right? I'm aware of whatever their condition may be, whether they function or whether they don't function. I'm aware of them, and so I have a subject-object relationship with them. I don't lose myself, or I don't dim as my sense organs dim. I'm just aware of my dimming sense organs, right? I'm aware of the condition of the sense organs. You're aware of the condition of your sense organs. You have a see-or-seeing relationship with them. And so even though all of our sense organs are different, I have my own set, you have your set, you have your set. That's just a, and so we all have all of these different sense organs right here in the room. That is not a comment on me or on you. The differences belong to the different sets of sense organs. They're not a statement at all upon my nature or your nature. The different sense organs don't make me different from you. They make the sense organs different from the sense organs. Same with the body, that makes the body different from the bodies. My body is different from your body. My sense organs are different from your sense organs, but both of them are objects of our awareness. And so then you get to the mind, which is the one that's aware of the sense organs. Then we say, well, I'm aware of my mind and all of my thoughts and all of my emotions, and I have my own set, my own little set of emotions, my own set of little, you know, unconscious issues, my little children inside, and, you know, all of the different thoughts and knowledges, everything that belongs to my mind, I'm aware of that, my mind, you're aware of your mind. Our minds are different, right? We have different experiences. But I'm not my mind, I'm the seer, the subject, the one who illumines the mind. You're not your mind. You're the seer, the drick, the one that illumines the mind. See what I mean? Subject, object. And so even though we have all these different minds in the room, I'm not my mind and you're not your mind. And so the differences in all of the minds has nothing to do with who I am and who you are. So if we keep going on like this, we can even say, you know, I am aware of space. True, I am aware of space. You're aware of space, right? I can say, I am aware of my I thought, one that says I am, or I am doing this, or I am doing that. That's a thought. It belongs to the mind. It's called the ahankara. I am doing this, I am doing that. I'm aware of that. I'm aware of my knowledge, the things, the knowledges that I've gained, as are you. And you're aware of your ignorances too, like I don't know Chinese, or I don't know Russian, or I've never been, this is my first time to Greece. Before I got here, I'd never had the experience of being in Greece or being in Crete, you know? How do I know that? Because I know, because I'm aware of what I know and I'm aware of what I don't know, right? So I'm neither what I know nor what I don't know. I'm the one who's aware of what I know and what I don't know. I'm even aware of the I thought, I am doing this, I am doing that, I am a woman or I am a man. I'm aware, these are just vrittis, they're just thoughts, they're experiences. But then again, I say, I am even aware of space itself, you know? I'm aware of time. What this means is actually everything I am aware of in terms of my experience, every single experience that exists within duality, that exists within my universe, I'm not aware of everything going on in the universe, but I'm aware of all experience that I have, including space, including time, including my thoughts and my emotions and my feelings, including all of my relationships. Everything that I experience I have, I am aware of and therefore free of. That's important. I'm aware of it and therefore free of it. And every experience that I have, without exception, comes and goes. It comes into being, it goes out of being. There's only one thing that doesn't come into being and go out of being, and that's being itself. That's me. I don't come into being and go out of being. Consciousness doesn't come into being and go out of being. If I came into being and went out of being, I'd be gone and then maybe somebody else would come. But in terms of my experience, all experiences means everything that is drishya, everything I can objectify, is subject to change. And it exists within time and space. Just think about any experience you have on a subtle level, like an emotional level, a mental level, an imaginal level, you know, dream states, any type of experience of this world or of subtle realms, all of those experiences come and go. They're all subject to change. But there is, no matter what the experience, there is one me, you know, who is the ultimate vrik, means the one who is the constant, the one, because all, if we remember when we went through this, like the rupas, the forms are many, the sense organs are one. One set of eyes, many forms. One mind, many conditions. Many conditions of the sense organs. The mind itself, many, 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 many countless types of thoughts, moods, and emotions. One sakshi, one self illuminating. Now that one self, I get to this one self, and I realize that, gee, every experience that I've identified with as me, like my body and my mind, my sense organs, my mind, my emotions, my different types of thoughts that I have, all of those actually are drishas. They're things that are objectified. They're things that exist within duality, which I have a subject-object relationship with. And so when that's the case, then I say, well, even I have a subject-object relationship even with space, even with time, even with relationships, you know, even with what I know and what I don't know. All of these things, all experiences fall into the world of drishya, that which is known, that which is objectifiable. Except everything, every experience, all subject to time and space, fell into this sense of being known. But the sakshi, the ultimate sakshi, the one that is aware of time and space itself, illumines time and space itself, that one can't be an object. I cannot be an object to myself, because I am the one who illumines everything. So I can't illumine myself as something separate I can just say I am self-luminous. In other words, for me, the conscious being, I can't say I'm conscious of me, the conscious being, in a subject-object relationship. I have to say I am conscious being. I am self-luminous, self-shining. I don't need another consciousness to come in and illumine me. And where would that other consciousness come in from? Because I already illumine time and space. I am aware of time and space. They are objects. So you're not going to have a consciousness zoom out of time and space to come in to illumine you. Because you already, time and space themselves are already in the world of the illumined, of that which is known, of that which requires a sakshi, or requires consciousness. So this me, what I'm saying is that this me that I am, I can't jump into time and space, into this world of experience, because I'm the luminary of all time and space and everything that exists in it. And you can't jump in, your conscious being, just it's going, you try to jump into time and space, you can't, because you're the luminary. You're the one because of whom it's known. You know, so always it will remain drisha. It will always remain objectified for you. So all of us are in this position. And so when we realize that, what is that? Who are we? Because none of us are this world that we're perceiving in this, to start with, because there's a subject-object relationship for all of us. None of us are our bodies, subject-object relationship. None of us are our sense organs. They're known. They're objectified. We witness them changing. None of us are our thoughts. They're known. None of us are our emotions. None of us are the I thought. I am doing this, I am doing that. That's just a thought. None of us are our relationships, because relationships go on changing. Right? You're always, the relationships are very, you know, yeah. None of us really also exist within space because we're aware of space. Space is objectified, you know. None of us exist within time because time is objectified. So let me give you an example of that we can all relate to. If you have a dream, you have a dream, say so you can make it a lucid dream if you want to, where you're very aware that it's a dream. But say you have a dream, the time and space belongs to the dream. Right? When you have a dream, the time and space is part of the dream. All of the characters are part of the dream. All of the activity is part of the dream. All of the relationships are part of the dream. The ahankara, the little dream character, says, oh, why don't we go and take a walk along the beach? So you all go and take a walk along the beach within the dream. Right? But the dream itself has a sakshi. I am the sakshi. I am the witness of the dream. Because of me, the dream, my dream, is known. The one who knows the dream, who is the conscious being that the dream enjoys, is not an object in the dream. Right? The object in the dream will be whatever, if in the dream you have a body and mind and sense organs that you're identified within the dream, you know, then you're a little person, little dream character walking around in the dream relating to other dream characters. But those dream characters, including the one you're identified with in the dream, right, they belong to duality. They belong to the duality of the dream world. And all of them, the entire dream, all of them enjoy yourself, your being, as the sakshi, as the conscious being which the dream enjoys. Just an aside, if I ask you now, right now, to have just have an imagination of yourself and your friends walking along this beautiful beach. You just have that imagination, and there you all are walking along the beach and enjoying yourself. You know, maybe sitting and putting your feet in the cool water. So you have this imagination, right? And that whole imagination You might have identified with a character in the imagination yourself, you know, with your friends walking along. That whole imagination, right, has who for the sakshi? This one, me. It's my imagination. I am, in a sense, for those who know, I am like the self of the whole, and I'm the self of every part. I'm the very being in which the whole imagination takes place. And I myself am the consciousness, the existence which that imagination enjoys when it's there. When it's not there, it's not there. When it's there, it enjoys me. As it enjoys means it has me for its essential nature, for its being, for its consciousness. Any imagination is like that, right? A dream is like that. The whole dream comes from me, is sustained by me, it resolves into me, it's my dream, you know? And I am the self, the conscious being, which that dream enjoys for its existence and for its shining, for its knownness. I provide the conscious being for that dream. Then you say, well, am I in the dream or am I outside of the dream? Well, that's an interesting question. We're going to spend a lot of time on that. But I would say, just for starters, I'm neither inside or outside of the dream. I'm what we call, in this case of the dream or the imagination, I am the very conscious being which the whole dream depends upon for its being, for its existence, for its knownness, for its consciousness. So it depends totally on me, but myself, I'm totally free from it. Right? Like you have an imagination, you don't go, oh, if I have this imagination, I don't know if I'll be able to get rid of it. If I turn into this imagination, right, will I be able to turn out of it? We don't even worry about that. That's the wonder, the maya, the beauty of imagination. You have an imagination, you can withdraw the imagination and nothing happens to you. But the imagination totally depends upon you, right? Otherwise you can't have it, you're not there, it's meaningless. But when you have the imagination, you are the self of the entire imagination, but you're not, the imagination depends on you, but you are not an object in the imagination. Right? You're the self of the whole imagination, you're not an object in it. To be an object in it, you have to have a body, or you have to have a mind or sense organs, you have to have some sort of a form that can be objectified, that can exist within this kind of variegated painting, living painting of the imagination, or of the dream. So now, to get back to us. All of this, everything that we experience right now here in this room, everything is objectified internally and externally, either through my sense organs, I'm aware of this room and of this body, or through the different types of capacities that my mind has, I can have different types of thoughts, different types of emotions, different types of memories, different types of intellections, different types of experiences that belong to the mind. Right? I can even have the ahankara, the I notion. I am doing this, I am doing that. These are all thoughts. I'm also very aware of space. I'm aware of time. I'm aware of the whole objectifiable universe of my experience. That includes the universe of my experience. We're just talking about the room right now. The universe of my experience includes all of you, it includes my body, right? It includes my sense organs, it includes all of my thoughts and my moods and my emotions, it includes my memories, it includes my relationships, it includes all of my knowledges and things that I know and things that I don't know. Anything that I can bring into the room is included. Right? It includes space and time. Right? This is the objectifiable world of my experience. Now what about me? These are all drishyas. These are all the objectified world. They're the things that can be known. But who am I? The sakshi, the ultimate sakshi that cannot be objectified because consciousness. Who am I? In reference to you. In reference to this room. So I would say, all right, I am the Sakshi, the conscious being, me, this me experience. It's very personal. Don't try to get some other experience other than who you are, just me. The me that is always, when you objectify, you're the one who's left. Right? You're the one who's there. If you say, I am the body, that's me, then you realize, actually, the body is objectified. So who am I? Who is this me? Oh, I'm the sense organs. Okay, I'm the sense organs. That's me. This is me. Okay, no, the sense organs are objectified. Okay, then who am I? This me? I'm my mind. Okay, I'm my mind. Okay, that's me. That's me. Yeah, but the mind is objectified. Okay, who am I? You know? So we're always only talking about me that has been superimposed because of self-ignorance on these experiences that come and go. So who is this me? I'm even aware of space, I'm aware of time. Right? I illumine space, I illumine time, I illumine all the relationships. So what if each one of us were to get rid of all of these points of identification? All of the things that we can be aware of, we get rid of. I'll just tell you what to get rid of just mentally, don't worry about it, won't really. Just in your head, just get rid of it. I'm aware of my body. So this body belongs to the room, not to me. Okay. It's part of the room. I'm aware of my sense organs. So my sense organs belong to the room. Okay. They go along with the body, they belong to the room. This room that I'm experiencing. I'm aware of all of my thoughts. So these thoughts all belong to the room. They're objectified. I'm aware of all of my emotions. They belong to the room. They're part of the story, okay? I'm aware of even the I thought. I am doing this, I am thinking that, I am sitting in class. That's just a thought. I'm aware of the I thought. I'm aware of all of my memories. All these have to go into the room, into the world, objectified world. Okay? Aware of relationships, aware of the I thought, aware, I'm aware of space, and I'm aware of this room, I'm aware of space. I'm aware of time, I'm aware of change. So now I'm just left. If you can think of anything else to be aware of, then that goes into the room also. Any experience that comes and goes, any type of vritti, any type of thought modification goes into the room. Because drishya, they have a subject-object relationship. So now, who am I? Who's left? Or just me is left. The me that's here all the way, from the one, the me that's the body, the me that's the sense organs, the me that's the mind, the me that's the I thought, then the me who is free of all of those things, right? That me is left. The me that I can't objectify. Finally, I can't objectify. I can just be me. And you can just be you. So we're all in the same boat. You're just being you, I'm just being me. And now what is the difference between us? This me that I am and the me that you are. What divides you from me? What makes you different from me? You can say, oh, the bodies, of course. But you're aware of your body and I'm aware of my body, right? This body's not me, it's not you. These sense organs are not me, they're not you. Your sense organs are different, my sense organs are different, but they're not me and they're not you. So there's no comment upon me, no comment upon you. Even your thoughts are different, your thoughts are different, my thoughts are different, but I'm not my thoughts, you're not your thoughts. My emotions are different, your emotions are different. I'm not my emotions, you're not your emotions. Okay? Your relationships are different, my relationships are different. But I'm not my relationships and you're not yours. Those are experiences. My knowledges are different, my ignorances are different. But I'm not my knowledge and I'm not my ignorance. Neither are you. I'm aware of space, you're aware of space. If I'm aware of time, you're aware of time. What's dividing us? So space must be dividing us. We've given up everything, so its bodies are not dividing us. Sense organs are not dividing us. The mind is not dividing us, the thoughts are not dividing us, the emotions are not dividing us. What makes this Sakshi, this me, different from you, so that there's two of us? When even space is objectified. There isn't anything to divide us, to make us two. In the level of me, there's only one. There's only one me. There's only one conscious being. There are many minds. Like, say, if you have a dream and you have many characters in the dream, each character is saying, you know, I am me. There's a bunch, like a bunch of little mirrors. You know? There are a bunch of little mirrors of one me. So what could make me different from you if everything in reference to the Sakshi becomes a drishya, something that is objectified, something that comes into being and goes out of being, is true for all of us? That means that this me that I am is the very me, the very self that you are. We can't even say we're all twins. We're all twins, we're all, you know, triplets or whatever. We can't say that. We can't say that because what would separate us? Like, you would have to say, well, okay, we're all little pockets of consciousness. We're little pockets of consciousness, but then what is containing the pocket? There's a little pocket over here and a little pocket over here and a little pocket over here. No, because space is objectified. Space itself is objectified. Just think of the dream or your imagination. There are no pockets of consciousness. There's one whole dream that enjoys your being. Just me. One me. And so, in fact, the wonderful thing as we start to understand this, I know you completely. I know who you are. Not the objectified parts, but the essential nature of you is me. You know? And your nature is me, my nature is you, not as twins, but as one conscious being that is my own self. Sometimes students will say at this, if we get to this point and we're sitting around this point, well, I don't want to be a universal self. I don't want to be a universe. I don't want to share. No share. I don't want to share. I want to just be me. But the fact is that we're not sharing anything. There's no sharing. There's no sharing. There's only one self. That one self isn't sharing anything. That one self, which is me, I happen to be this me that I am, happens to be the self of this whole dream. This whole dream now that we call Ishwara, this whole dream, this whole creation that we illumine, it is illumined just by one conscious being that is myself. That is not a universal self. That is one self, which is me. And so from that standpoint of me, of the innermost Sakshi, say, you know, then I know you because I am you. You know, not because we're twins or like each other, but because there is only one self, which is the self of the whole creation, actually. I say of the whole creation because, from one standpoint, because everything within time and space, when we mean everything within time and space within duality is what we mean by the whole creation. Everything that exists within time and space, that exists on an imaginal, on a subtle level, the level of the mind or the subtle world, or on the level of the physical world, all of that exists within duality. All is subject to change. All is coming and going in being, in conscious being. I am the conscious being. I am the, and that conscious being sounds a little abstract. So just think me. All of it is coming and going in me. This me, that is me, not some capital S self, but this very most intimate me, that this most intimate me that is myself, is not something which is objectifiable. I'm not objectifiable as an object. You know, I just am the one who is present in every experience that I have. Every experience that I have is my experience, in the sense that I am there. It doesn't matter, the experiences all come and go, the moods, the emotions, they all come and go, the relationships come and go, but I am the one who is constant. And so because of this, it's a simple fact to be recognized. And in a sense, it's not that hard to recognize it, because there's only one thing like that. Within the creation, everything within the creation is subject to change, to coming and going, to modifying. Even every thought that you have, every experience that you have, it's a thought modification. They're all coming and going. If it's coming and going, it's not you. So, that's good. That's easy. If you can get rid of it, it's not you. So you just have to recognize, what is there, the me, the constant, myself? If I can't get rid of it, that's me. You know, if I can get rid of it, that's just an experience. The one way to think of this, it's so important because of just our era. Say if you think, well, let me meditate and have an experience of myself. Well, you are there before, during, and after the meditative experience. And so then you think, let me have an experience of myself, though. Okay, well, you go ahead and have an experience of yourself, but if that experience goes away, it's not you. Right? Because it's gone and you're still here. So it's not that meditative experiences aren't valuable, but they have to be understood properly, because if you have a meditative experience where you're quietening everything down and you're making your mind very, very quiet so that you can kind of reflect your own presence, then when that meditative mind goes away, it should have helped you to recognize the one who doesn't go away. When the meditative mind goes away, you're still there. And so meditation actually helps you to recognize the stability of yourself that goes away even when the meditative experience is not there. Because there's no time ever when you are not here. And so meditation, that becomes a tricky thing, because a lot of times we're looking at meditation to give us an experience of the self, but that can be very dangerous, because then your experience of the self comes and goes, even though you're still here. So that becomes, you know, an issue that we have to work on with some of these notions that we have. So all of that being the case with the strict Krishna Viveka, let's look at the meaning of this verse now in verse 5. Talking about consciousness, conscious being, the me, yourself, it says, na udeti, na astameti, esha. Esha is feminine, it means this chitti, this consciousness, this conscious being that I am, the nature of the sakshi, the very self of the witness. This consciousness, na udeti, it does not rise, na astameti, nor does it set, like the sun rises and the sun sets. Consciousness never rises, it never sets. It's a way of saying, consciousness, the conscious being that you are, be not an object within time and space, never comes into being or goes out of being. You simply are, free of birth and death, free of being born and dying, free of coming into being and going out of being. Your being is there, free of time and space. You are what you are. You're free of change. So this esha, this consciousness, na udeti, it never rises and it doesn't set. Right? It doesn't wake up, it doesn't go to sleep, it isn't born, it doesn't die. It is free of time, free of space. Also, navriddhi, navriddhim yati, nakshayam yati. Nor does consciousness grow. It doesn't expand. Consciousness doesn't expand. Nor does it decay. In Carl Jung, a psychologist that I've actually spent many years studying, he would look at consciousness as something that is growing. The more knowledge that you get, the more experiences that you have, the consciousness is growing and growing and growing and growing. because he looks at consciousness as a collection of vrittis, a collection of knowledges, a collection of experiences. You know? And then I guess when you, as the mind kind of crumbles, those experiences also kind of crumble and decay. This is the, but here, this is a whole different standpoint. It's not, from Jung, he's very much involved just within the mind, within duality. He never goes outside of duality. For you, for a conscious being that is free of time and space, it's not that you are going to expand, your consciousness is going to expand and then it will decay in time. It neither expands nor decays because your being is free of time and space. Right? So there's no objectification, there are no parts, there's no space, there's no beginning, there's no time, there's no birth and there's no death. There's no parts because you're not an object within duality. So the conscious being that you are is something which is changeless. From within itself, it has no parts and it's not subject to any change. So that means is this me, the self that you are, as you are, you always have been, you always will be, you're not going to become better, you're not going to become worse, you're not going to become old, you're not going to be born and go through death, because you, your being itself is what we call the Adhishtana. It's the very self, the very consciousness which all time and space depend upon, but which is free of time and space. So that means yourself, the self that you are right now, if from the standpoint of the creation, if you believe in reincarnation, as we'll see, which is very much in the Vedic tradition, if you think of yourself as taking body after body after body from beginningless time, so let's go back a million years ago, and who knows what you looked at like at that time, or what your form was at that time, you know. But one thing is that the me was exactly the same. This me, the self that you are, is not subject to time. So whether it's me a billion years ago or a billion years into the future from the standpoint of within the creation, the self that I am is the self that I am. It's not something that goes through any type of time whatsoever. So then it says, for me there's no increase nor decrease, there's no being born, there's no rising and no setting. Then it says, Swayam Vibhati, I myself shine. Swayam means myself. I am my own experience. Experience means I am consciousness itself. The shining, the knownness, is my own svarupa. It is my own nature. So I am self-effulgent, self-evident. I don't need another light to light me up. I don't need, nor can I have, another consciousness to come and light me up. I am the light itself. I am the consciousness itself. So Swayam Vibhati, I am my own self-effulgent, self-evident conscious being, my own. When I say my own experience, I don't mean subject-object experience. I mean that consciousness is consciousness. Me is me, I'm self-evident. I don't need somebody to light me up so that I know myself. I am self-shining. So Swayam Vibhati. Then, and being myself self-evident, Ata then Anyani Basiyate, I Basiyate, I illumine everything else. Anyani mean everything else. Myself being, conscious being, self-evident light, this light of consciousness is the luminary because of which everything else is illumined. And then he says, Vina, sadhana, vina, without any sadhana whatsoever. Consciousness doesn't need any other means in order to shine. So what lights up the mind? What is lighting up my mind? What allows, what is it because of which my mind, all of my thoughts, all of my emotions, all of my experiences are known? That is consciousness itself. Because of me, because of the light of consciousness, the mind is known. The emotions are known. The memories are known. The perceptions are known. Whatever experience is there, that is known. Without anything intervening. There is no anything intervening between consciousness itself and the mind, you know, which is lit up. we'll get into this more, but just to make it clear, in terms of your all of your experiences that you have, all of those experiences take place in the mind, right? So even, say I have experiences through my sense organs, you know, my eyes and my ears, my sense of touch, etc. My sense organs, I'm experiencing this world. But the sense organs are working as they are instruments for me. They're my instruments that give thought modifications to the mind. That's why we say the mind has to be using those sense organs in order to for them to function. I have these sense organs ready and waiting always to be used, but my mind has to use them. Right? If I was sitting here quietly, my teacher often would just make a joke, saying, here all the students are sitting and he's giving this wonderful lecture and all this. And there's one student over there who'd go like this, is sitting like this. And then go like that. So during that time, there was an imagination going on. There was a daydream going on. Or you were thinking about what you have to do tomorrow, or what I'm going to do after this class. So your mind was engaged in other activities, right? It wasn't using the sense organs. So even though the sense organs were here, your ears were here, your eyes were here, you weren't seeing anything, you weren't hearing anything. Your mind was engaged in other activities. So what I experience, what I illumine, which the Sakshi consciousness, the me, illumines, is whatever is going on in my mind, whether that be an imagination, or I'm just lost in a fantasy, or I'm utilizing my sense organs, or I'm having a memory, or I'm thinking through a problem. Whatever I'm experiencing through the mind in terms of what we call a vritti. Vritti means a thought modification. So consciousness is illumining, the conscious, the me, is illumining all of these thought modifications without anything intervening. Okay? So that's going to take us to another, where we get into sattva, rajas, and tamas and all of that. But the mind itself, right, the mind itself becomes like the receptacle or the one that is known. Because the mind, every thought that you have is known, right? We call consciousness, the me, that is the luminary of that thought, the sakshi, the witness of the thought. The witness of the thought is the witness doing any witnessing? We say, no, not really. It's just consciousness. I am just consciousness because of which the thought is known, right? It's like if the sun, say the sun is up, it's day, the sun is up, and so our whole world of experience is being illumined by the sun. Is the sun illumining the world as an activity? Is that its job? My job is to illumine the world, right? And say no. It's not doing anything except just being the sun. It's not doing a job. It is a luminous ball of fire, and that fire is so huge and so brilliant that everything in its orb becomes illumined. Not because it's doing a job, the job of illumining the earth. In its presence, the earth is illumined. But it's not doing anything other than just being the sun. See what I mean? I am conscious being. Because of me, whatever vritti, whatever thought is there, that thought is known. But the knownness, that's the luminary. The knownness is the very swarupa, the very nature of consciousness itself. Consciousness is self-evident, self-shining me. And whatever comes into my orb in the form of a vritti or thought modification, that is known. Not because I am performing an act of knowing it, but because it rises into conscious being and it goes out of conscious being. If it rises into conscious being in the form of a thought, then it is known. By the very fact that it has come into conscious being, it is known. Not because I am a knower. It's like, okay, I think let me witness these thoughts now. I don't think I'll witness them. It's not like that. A thought comes into being, comes into conscious being, it is known. But thoughts by their very nature, emotions, all experiences by their nature come into conscious being, go out of conscious being. Conscious being remains conscious being. Anything that comes into it enjoys conscious being. Goes out of it, it no longer enjoys conscious being. Conscious being is the me. I say that because when you say conscious being, it sounds kind of abstract. Conscious being. I am conscious being. I'm me. This conscious being, let those words land on the very personal me. That we'll start seeing this now in the meditation. This me, the self that you are, the self who is present to every experience you have, but the experience that you have, enjoy when it is there, enjoys me, the conscious being which is me. When that experience goes, next thought comes, that enjoys the conscious being, which is me. I am what we call the Adhishtana. I am the truth of what, of every experience that comes and goes. I am the being that that experience enjoys, and I am the knownness that the experience enjoys. Every experience you have comes into me, comes into that knownness, that consciousness, comes into being itself, and goes out of being, right? Just think any thought, it wasn't here, boom, it here, it's here. It has being, it is known, goes away, it has no being, it is not known, right? So, it's kind of, when you think of even this moment, oops, it's gone, okay? This moment, gone. This moment, gone. But we don't freak out. We don't freak out because I am here. There's never the slightest, nothing is ever unstable. Because conscious being is stable. Conscious being, the me that you are, is free of time and space. There's nothing more stable. So all of the unstable creation, unstable means it's continual change, continual birth and death, continual coming and going. You know, there couldn't be more change taking place. It's a continual, like kaleidoscope of change going on. But it's all fine because it's the truth of it is absolutely stable. And that truth is me. The me that cannot, is not an object in time and space. I am the one who is stable. So when I recognize that, there's a tremendous freedom. I don't have to worry about becoming unstable me. I can't become unstable. I'm the stable one. But this, we need this drisha viveka, the seer seen differentiation, because I have never just recognized myself as I am. I'm always only seeing myself through the lens of my body, or the lens of my relationships, or the lens of my emotions, or of my thoughts, or, you know, through the lens of the world. I never recognize seeing myself as the stability, the one who is stable, the one who is changeless, the one who is whole and complete, who is the very self of all of this that's going on. That's the viveka. That's the discrimination we have to keep working on. Mm-hmm.